Greetings and thank you for listening. My name is Nick and I'm one of the pastors here at St. Catherine's United Mennonite Church. During this time when our Sunday gatherings are on hold, I'll be recording and uploading the reflections I've prepared each week. This week we've also put together a little order of service to go along with what I'll share. That's for you to use either on your own if you'd like or with your family. Just as a few songs, the words we felt meaningful in connection to this text and the theme, and a prayer and some words of blessing as well. If you're on our email list, you'll have received that. If not, I'd invite you to be in touch with our office and ask to be signed up, and you can receive those sorts of things moving forward. As with last week, the last few weeks, I find myself changing plans. Same with many of you right now, having to adjust and adjust again. This Sunday, as some of you might know, was set to be Heart Song Sunday at our church, and we've decided to defer that until we're able to gather together again, something we'll look forward to later on. And I decided I'll look again at one of this week's lectionary texts. That text is John chapter 11, verses 1 to 45. It's a story of Lazarus as it comes to us from that fourth gospel. And I'll read it for you now. I would invite you to read along if you'd like, and to bear with me, I'd ask, as it is a longer section, but it's good to hear the full story, the complete narrative, as we do. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who had poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back." Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's lights. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." And Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been dead, had been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world." After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit, and he was troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, lords," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" Then they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. All around the world today, churches are reading and reflecting on this story. They'll be doing this in whatever creative ways that they're able to do during this time. Timely text in so many ways, and I'm sure that there will be many rich reflections and insights drawn from it. Today I'm going to reflect on just three things that struck me as I sat with this story this week. I suspect that many other people will have drawn some of these points of connection as well, but they're ones that I felt helpful for us in this time. And those three aspects, those three points of focus for me are confusion, compassion, and resurrection. I'm just struck by a sense of confusion, compassion, and resurrection when reading this story. Starting with confusion. These have been incredibly disorienting days and weeks for us in our worlds. They've been confusing. It can seem like as soon as we've started to make sense of the situation quickly changes and we're forced to try to make sense of it again. We're told one thing and then we're told another. We take in information and then we have to take in new information. We have to sort out reliable sources from unreliable ones, from misinformation. We have to daily weigh all of these differing opinions and perspectives and approaches held by different family members and friends. This can feel like a really confusing time, I think, and in many ways that's totally fair and understandable. In a number of ways, I believe that we might even find ourselves in good company with the people in this account that we find here in John's Gospel. Because in this story, the story of Lazarus, we see confusion at nearly every turn. The facts at the start are straightforward enough, as they are for us today. People are sick. Someone's health is compromised such that they are in a life-threatening condition. We're told at the start of this story that this man named Lazarus is ill, and so his siblings, Mary and Martha, call for Jesus, who is at that time off in another place, another town. They call for Jesus in the hopes that he'll come, in the hopes that he'll do something, because that's what they had seen Jesus do with others, and so they believed in this time that he might do the same for their brother. But Jesus, we're told, doesn't come. He stays where he is and offers instead this mysterious word of assurance, a word that might have seemed utterly useless at first to those two women in the midst of their their heart-wrenching experience. Jesus says, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory that God's Son might be glorified through it." And that's it. After that, he stays put. He stays where he is. Why? Why, Mary and Martha must have asked, did he not immediately rush over to be with Lazarus and to be with them? Why didn't he come right away to help, to be with these people that he loved? John offers this explanation. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Again, this must have been so confusing for them, so incredibly difficult to understand. As with our lives right now, there's this painful distance between them in the story, this time of separation, these days of being apart. It's this distance that, there's a distance that, like the family in this story, we might feel sometimes is unnecessary or even frustrating, because we want for them to be close. We want for them to be able to come and be with us, especially in a time like this. It's maybe one of the most agonizing aspects of what we're going through right now at this stage of things in this region. This isolation and these distancing measures in this time of suffering. Jesus loved them, John tells us, and so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, Jesus stayed where he was. He loved them, so he stayed where he was. It's confusing for them. It was maybe confusing for some of us as well. From there, Jesus goes on to tell his disciples that they should all go back to Judea. And here again, they're bewildered. They're presented with this change of plans, and they're initially perplexed about the reason for it. They remind Jesus, in case he had forgotten, that that's where people had tried to kill him earlier. So Jesus responds to them, again, cryptically. Are there not 12 hours of daylight, he says. Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's lights. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no lights. He then tells them, Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going to wake him up. And as we might at this point expect, it doesn't exactly clear things up for the disciples. Sleep will do him good, they say. If he's sick, he should be getting lots of bed rest. Yes, that's what he's being is being recommended right now. He's been sent home and should stay in his room and recover. Why would you want to go and wake him up, Jesus? Why would you do that? Seeing that his followers really aren't seeing it, Jesus drops the metaphor he'd been using and explains it to them as straightforwardly as he can. Lazarus is dead, he says, and for your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Again, it's confusion at every turn. Even at this point, even with Jesus speaking plainly to them and saying, okay, let's go now, let's go see Lazarus, the disciples miss it and they misunderstand it. They can't wrap their heads around what Jesus is doing, what he's about to do. John tells us, for example, that Thomas pipes up after all this, offering that all the disciples should then go and die alongside Lazarus. It's kind of radical solidarity in response to suffering, maybe. But again, just not at all understanding what Jesus intends to happen here. We're told that by the time that they actually get there, by the time that Jesus actually shows up, Lazarus had already been in the tomb for more than half a week. And Martha comes out to see him then, as he arrives. And she's upset at Jesus. She's angry. She's furious in the face of inaction. It's this response that we too are seeing in many places around our world today. People just raging at leaders and leadership, that have enacted measures too slowly, or have done not enough. This outcry at having responded just too slowly. If you had done something earlier, she says, he would have still been alive. If you had listened and if you had only responded, we wouldn't be right here where we are right now. If you had been here, my brother would not have died, Martha says to Jesus. And yet, along with that, mixed in with all of her anger and her grief, is still a sense of possibility as she looks to Jesus, a sense of belief and hope and perhaps even faith, a sense of openness in the face of a situation that now might feel as closed as the cave that her brother's body was laid in. I know, she tells Jesus, that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. Even now, you might do something. And so like her, we wrestle with it. Is there an openness to this situation that feels so closed for us? Might God be at work and invited to be at work? Or is this pandemic something that is just set to play itself out? How do we pray in this time? How do we come before Jesus? How do we hold to a sense of hope and possibility and divine ability and action in a time like this? How do we do what Martha does, somehow holding that question of, where were you until now, along with the question of, will you please do something for us now? Jesus looks at Martha and tells her, your brother will rise again. And again, we quickly come back to confusion. I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day, she tells Jesus. That's what you've taught us. That's what we believe. Jesus replies to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Yes, Lord, she says, I believe that. I believe you. And yet that doesn't change the facts of the moment. And so from there, she goes back to tell her sister that Jesus had arrived. Mary comes out to see him and says, John tells us the very same thing to Jesus at first. If you had been here, my brother would not have died. Again, it maybe connects to some of those deep spiritual questions that are maybe stirring inside of us in these days. We believe you can do something. Why didn't you? Why don't you? Why did you just seem to sit back and allow this to happen? Why? It's confusion and questions at every turn in the story. From what we're hearing now today, we're perhaps only at the beginning of everything that's happening with these outbreaks and measures. Maybe for some time yet, as I said last week. And yet from the very start of the pandemic and the earliest days of the measures that have been put in place, people have been wondering about where God is and what God might be doing in the midst of this. I've heard this from many of you, even as I've talked to some of you in the past few days. And that's, again, natural. And those are good questions to be asking and wrestling with. From my perspective, it's a good thing to be wondering where God might be and what God might be doing. It's very natural and a very human response to ask those kind of questions, especially in the midst of suffering. That's why we see it here in this text, in this story. And yet, the story of Lazarus is perhaps also a good reminder for us of the limits of our understanding when it comes to the answers to those questions. Throughout this account, the disciples try to pinpoint what Jesus is doing. They try to identify and go along with what they think he might do. And yet they struggle to grasp it fully all the way through to the very end. They're completely confused the whole way through. So that might perhaps be an encouragement and invitation for us as well. in this time when people are already offering up all kinds of suggestions about what God might want for us in this time or what God might be doing in this world now in this moment, we might do well to remember the limits of our understanding as people. We might do well to hold those questions with a sense of humility and a sense of mystery and a keen awareness of our own humanity. We might also be comforted and assured in a way to know that what God was determined to do through Jesus in this situation didn't at all depend on the disciples' ability to fully grasp his purpose and plan. They didn't need to understand it. So as I reflected on this story, I was struck, firstly, again, by that sense of confusion. The second thing that I was struck with while working through this passage was a sense of compassion. I don't know about you, but it's been really hard, really difficult for me to try to internalize and process everything that's been happening over these past few weeks. One of the things that's been challenging for a lot of people, I think, is maintaining a sense of humanity in the midst of this. Since the very start, it's been a lot of numbers. It's been a constant flood of statistics. We're continually inundated with statistics about the amount of cases, statistics about the level of risk, the number of deaths, the amount of people who've recovered, the amount of unemployment claims being made, the numbers of the plummeting stock market, and so on. We have new figures and charts and graphs dumped on us daily. In a lot of ways, we maybe aren't really capable of making sense of suffering at that scale, at this scale. For many of us, it's maybe more than our minds can make sense of in any truly meaningful way. It's more than our hearts or our empathy can accommodate with any real depth. And so we maybe find that it sinks in a bit more deeply when the stories are more personal or intimate, when we read and hear about individuals and families who've been impacted, when we hear about individuals and families in our own community who've been impacted and are beginning now to see further impacts on their lives. One of the things then that I was struck with as I read through this story of Lazarus again and again last week was that it is such a deeply personal, intimate, and humane account. Suffering here is not just a number flashed across a screen. Suffering is a person. Suffering has a name, Lazarus. And suffering, as it always is situated in a particular social context. There's a family here. Lazarus's sisters, Mary and Martha, and there are friends and community, all the people who that we read read about who come to be with them and to comfort them through this time. Which is a good reminder for us again, maybe, in a time when we risk losing sight of the individual humanity in the midst of all the data and reports that we're constantly presented with. I'm also struck with a deep sense of compassion, coming back to that second point of focus here. There's this truly beautiful sense of connectedness between the people in this story. Even in the midst of experiences of distance and disconnectedness. As we've seen even in our lives, in our communities, and our families, there's this vulnerability and tenderness, even in the midst of this profoundly difficult time. At various points in the story, Jesus was seemed to be this far off presence, and seemed to be acting and speaking in completely incomprehensible ways. And yet, as we continue through this story, we come to see him also as one who's intimately present, and as one who loved deeply. From the very start of the story, Lazarus is seen to be more than a statistic of human sickness and suffering. He's a person, and more than a number. But Even more than that, I believe, he's identified as one who's beloved by Christ, who's one who's cherished by the very heart of God in Jesus. In these verses, Lazarus, along with his sisters, is called the one whom Jesus loved and a friend of Jesus. And we see this sense of Christ's compassion all the more clearly, I believe, as we continue to move through this story. With Mary sobbing at his feet and all of Lazarus's friends and community members standing alongside them, John tells us that Jesus was deeply moved in his spirits and that he was troubled. If there was any sense in their minds that Jesus was uncaring or indifferent in the face of this, that all disappears now. Here we see another side of him, this deep, deep tenderness, this deep, deep connection. We see the one who's fully God, allowing the fullness of his humanity to be open to the world's pain and grief as it was embodied in that time and place. In this startling and striking way, Jesus opens himself up to the impact of it, yielding along with everyone else to the heavy emotional weights of this suffering and loss in that moment. "Where have you laid him?" Jesus asks. "Come and see," they say. And with that, Jesus himself broke open in the presence of the brokenness that he felt and saw. Maybe he allowed himself to, or maybe like so many of us these days, listening to heartbreaking story after heartbreaking story, he really couldn't help but be moved by the sorrow of it in that moment. Jesus wept, John tells us. In that familiar and beloved verse, Jesus wept. Here we see God's tears commingling with ours. Here we see God's co-suffering presence with humanity in the midst of it all, in the very hearts of their hurts. And everyone who was watching in that moment, we're told, is not so much struck by the emotional display itself, but by the heart that they see behind it. See how he loved them, they exclaimed. See how he loved him. In this time today, when so many around the world are experiencing suffering and loss, and so many others are watching it all and grieving with them, we see Jesus as the one who comes alongside and lovingly and tenderly mourns with an ailing and aching humanity. We see Jesus as the one who weeps with the weeping. And throughout this story, I believe we also see a kind of shared humanity. We see a kind of co-suffering care shared between kin. As in so many places in our world today, this is a family who is deeply concerned for the well-being of their loved one, their brother Lazarus. And as with today, this is a family who is distraught when he became unwell, and a family who is desperate to do anything that they could to see that he was cared for and cured. And surrounding them through that time as well was this compassionate community. We see all these people come from the area and encircle them and be with them and share with them in their sorrow and in this time as they're reeling from all of this. And I wonder if that perhaps might be an image and an invitation for us as well, as the impact of this continues to bear down on the world and continues to bear down on people we know as well. With all the social distancing measures that are in place and that we're committed to following, we may not be able to come and be physically present to one another, like all the Jewish neighbors and friends that we read about in this story, but we can be there for one another in other ways all the same, in equally meaningful ways for one another during this time. I was struck, firstly, by that sense of confusion, secondly, by that sense of compassion, and finally, I was struck by a sense of resurrection. I have to say that it can be tempting to go straight to resurrection. That is, after all, the center point of this story, the focal points of it, and the center point of our faith, we might say, as followers of Christ, the risen one. It can be tempting for us to go right to the bright hope and new life, to point to those things and have that be what we share with people in these hard times. I hear some of that these days. And that is where the story leads us, both in this particular story from Scripture and in the larger story that we find ourselves in as friends and followers of Jesus. But it's important to remember that they don't get there immediately, and we don't get there immediately either. The people in this story only come to see and experience that eventually with time. Which is why I left this one to the end. To be true, it is a wonderful and powerful thing. As we pick up the story again, we see these patterns of compassion and confusion continue, moving us along as readers to the incredible thing that God is about to do. Jesus, we're told again, was deeply moved as he comes towards the tomb. That word here reflects this deep sense of compassion. He's moved by this gut-level response, born out of deep affection, moved to the point of groaning, the language reflects. And he tells him to take away the stone. And it's this direction that's met again with confusion. Again, seeing this at every turn. What do you mean, take away the stone? You know that there's a body in there, right? And you know what bodies do over time. It's been 4 days, Jesus. If you want to grieve for your friend, grieve outside like everyone else. Let's not upset everyone further with that sight and that smell. Yet again, they don't understand. They don't see what's happening. They don't grasp the fullness of what Jesus is doing, what God's doing, even up to the very end of the story. Jesus tells them, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they oblige him. They do as he says, and they take away the stone. And after it's rolled back, Jesus turns his eyes upward and he prays. And after he had done so, we're told that he calls out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." And sure enough, John tells us, Lazarus, who had been dead for 4 days, emerges from the cave. He stands there before them all, still wrapped in his grave clothes. And Jesus tells them to take off all the strips of cloth and the covering that was wrapped around his face, because he's now living, now alive in front of them. And he tells them to let him go. And many people, John tells us, who saw this then believed. Confusion, compassion, resurrection. Confusion, compassion, and resurrection. This text, this really wonderful text, is situated where it is in the lectionary readings because it anticipates Easter. It is set in this place in the church calendar because it points us towards that. It anticipates and hints at Jesus' own path through death and to his risen life. And I wonder if part of us today wants to be there already. We're only a few weeks into this outbreak, this pandemic being something that we're actively impacted by here in this area, and yet so many of us just want it to be over. I've heard this from talking to a lot of you over the past several days. We want to be through this and out on the other side already. This has already been difficult in many ways, even if we're currently removed from those epicenters of the heartbreak, the outbreak, where it's being felt most acutely. And we do have the hope of Easter to anticipate. We have the reality of resurrection to cling to and to look forward to. And yet, we're not there yet. Like Mary and Martha and all their friends in this story, there's all of this distance and time in between, and all of these questions that we must live with and live through first. The hope for us in the in-between then is that is where the story and where history indeed is headed. It's the hope that, as Jesus said in these verses, that whoever lives by believing in me will never die. That we ought to be careful and taking precautions in these days for our sake and for the sake especially of others. But we need not fear death in the end, because death in Jesus is not the last word. Whoever lives by believing in me will never die. And we have the hope. The hope for us is that until then we have each other. We have a community that's marked by compassion and committed to care. Even with all the constraints we currently face, we're there for one another, and we're working to care for one another. And we have the hope. The hope for us is that we have Jesus. Jesus, who is compassionately with us in the midst of it, like he was in this story, lovingly suffering with, weeping with. And so, like Martha and Mary, we look to him. We call for him. We ask him desperately to come. Because Jesus, the one whom you love, is sick. Amen.